And now the opinion page. Nearly every piece of technology we interact with requires a password. You need one to check your email, your bank account, to access your online music collection. Then there's Twitter and Facebook news sites, not to mention the passwords you use to get onto your computer or your smartphone in the first place. To protect all that personal data, we're told these passwords should be long and complicated. We should use numbers, letters, and symbols, but not personal information like birth dates. No two passwords should be the same. You should never write them down, and you're supposed to remember them all. In a piece for The Atlantic, Rachel Swaby argues we're required to take downright ridiculous precautions to maintain our online security, and it's not sustainable. In fact, it never was. We want to hear from those of you who've been hacked or had your online security compromised. What changes did you make afterwards? What's your password strategy? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation at our webpage. Go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. Rachel Swaby is a freelance writer based in San Francisco, and she joins us now from our member station there, KQED. Nice to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
And you were sort of inspired to write this piece after the story of a Wired writer, Matt Honan, getting hacked in pretty much every way possible. Remind us, what happened?
So his problem was a little bit different than kind of a simple password. What his hackers did is they called Amazon and then they called Apple, and they socially engineered their way into his accounts. So with one piece of information, they were able to get another and another and another, and then they were able to get into his devices, his Gmail, his Twitter, and they were able to, like, wipe all of his information.
Terrible story. Social engineering is a fancy term for conning, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So a good old con game worked as opposed to a technological hack, but both are used to get through our passwords. And you say it's interesting, going back to 1971, pre-internet, pre-everything, that people realized this was not going to work.
Right. A study out of Bell Labs was looking at passwords, and what they found is that people are just really, really bad at them. And if you give them the choice to make up a password, they're going to think about something that's really easy to remember. And that has continued today. That hasn't changed.
And so this is a system you suggest was broken at the beginning and has successfully succeeded to get even worse. It was, some years ago that Bill Gates himself said the password is dead.
Yeah, I mean, I think people have been hoping for a new system for a really long time. I mean, the problems have been clear, but with more services and more devices and basically, in order to change everything, you'd need people to collaborate across everything. You know, what would be easiest for us is if everyone could kind of have a meeting and get together and say, like, hey, let's all work together on a system that's better for people. But instead, they work separately to try to find a system that's better for machines.
For machines, and that's kind of the problem. And in a world where we're accessing our devices in new ways, it's not just a keyboard anymore.
Right. I mean, there are some kind of neat approaches to passwords that the touchscreen, for instance, has helped us with. So if you have an Android phone, you can kind of make a pattern over some dots and have that as your login. But people have pointed out that they're nervous about that because, you know, you can see the smudge on a screen. And so maybe that could be used to get into a phone. Windows, the new Windows, has they allow you to look at a picture and kind of trace some dots across a picture. So if you have a picture of your family, you could connect all of the noses, and that would be your login. So there's some neat things on the horizon, but kind of device specific.
What about all that biometric data, or all those biometric approaches? I'm waiting for the retina scan.
Right. So some of that kind of weirds people out. And, you know, researchers know that. There's a researcher at NYU, Nazir Memon, and he's been kind of trying to figure out how that biometric data could be not as weird for us. Like, if we were to turn a dial on our touchscreen, the way that our fingers pressed against the screen and the space between our fingers, they could capture that instead of, you know, an actual kind of fingerprint or an eye scan, which seems really strange. And so they're working on getting that better. It's not quite up to 14 character password strength.
What happens if you catch your finger in a vise and you have to wear a Band-Aid on it? Then you're in trouble. You can't get into any accounts.
Well, yeah. So there are problems, clearly.
It's interesting, as you, there was during it's quite familiar. Operators of Morse code could always tell who was on the other end of the key by what there was called their fist. It was a characteristic clicking pattern that everybody was different.
Yeah. So DARPA has thought about this, and they actually have a call for researchers to think about how just the way that you interact with your computer could be the login, you know, like the way that you kind of swipe across your touchpad or the rhythm of the way that you tap the keypad. Like that could be a continuous way that that your computer could tell if you're the one sitting there. Because if you log into everything and you walk away and someone walks up, that's clearly a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of neat that they could capture that signature. So they're looking into it.
If you log into your computer and walk away and let somebody else walk up, it's clearly a sign that you're an idiot.
Right. Well, DARPA is clearly a little more worried about this than kind of the average user.
We should pay attention to them since they invented the thing in the first place.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So as you look at these promising technological advances, they all have one overwhelming problem in that all these businesses that now use passwords have an investment in, inertia.
Right, right. I mean, it's just really hard to change a system that's been around so long, and it works for them. It just doesn't work for us, which is the problem.
So we're talking about passwords with Rachel Swaby, a freelance writer based in San Francisco. Her piece, The Password Fallacy, Why Our Security System is Broken and How to Fix It, ran in The Atlantic earlier this month. And as if these other systems aren't going to be, or at least are not in the offing, no immediate solution, no immediate panacea, if we're stuck with passwords, what do we do?
So security experts recommend that we have 14-character passwords that don't contain dictionary words. It's kind of a random string of symbols and letters and numbers. And, you know, if you do that across all 40, some 40-odd sites that we are required logins, then we should be good. But that's hard. So there are services.
Yeah, what do we do the rest of the day?
Right, right. So there's a service called, you know, 1Password, and that will keep all of these. It will generate these kind of passwords for you, and it will keep them for you, so you don't actually have to remember them. So that's a good start. The other thing is, you know, you can make passwords that are not, you know, dictionary words are bad, and so are kind of your birth date, because those are easy to guess, and substituting numbers for letters is not great either. But, you know, one of the security experts I had talked to said, you know, he takes a line from a favorite song and he takes the first letter of each word in that line.
That might work if you can remember the song.
I know.
Let's get some callers in on the conversation. We want to hear from those of you who've been hacked or had your security compromised in some way. What's your new password strategy now? 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. And Max on the line with us from San Jose.
Hi.
Hi, Mac.
Basically, I was actually commenting on password programs that will remember your passwords for you, and I think the lady mentioned it right now. But I use a couple of different programs. One of them that I use is called RoboForm or LastPass. Basically, I have over 200 passwords that I have to remember. I don't remember them. I only remember one password. Those programs synchronize the passwords across everything that I use, the Android phone, the desktop, the laptop,
mm-hmm.
at work, everywhere. So it's a really cool thing.
And there's a password to get into this program, presumably.
Yes, and it has to be pretty hard so nobody else can guess it, number one. Number two, with these programs, they avoid the keyloggers. There can be viruses that are called keyloggers that basically take a snapshot of the website where you're at, and they send it over the internet with the password that you're typing in. So if you have this sort of a password program, manager program, it'll simply paste the password in there, and it's not traced as a keystroke, so it cannot be hacked that way either.
Rachel Swaby, is that what you were talking about, these kinds of programs?
Yeah, yeah, that's great. And also kind of two-step verification where possible is really helpful.
Like many bank accounts have.
bank accounts, Gmail, Dropbox, they offer these services.
Well, thanks very much, Mac.
Yep, thanks.
Email from, from Michael. All devices are working towards having a webcam-type camera in them tied to facial recognition that would result in natural passwording. Is that right?
Yeah, so that's a possibility. You know, when I think the Android phone came out, there was picture recognition, but it could be, but you could open it with a photograph. So they're still having some problems with it, and I think it needs to get a lot better before that becomes the thing that's going to allow someone into all of your data.
We're talking with Rachel Swaby on the Opinion Page this week. There's a link to her piece that was published in The Atlantic at our website. Go to npr.org, click on Talk of the Nation. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And this from AJ in Berkeley. When I'm prompted to create a password, I decide whether I'm annoyed by it or not. If not, I choose a phrase from a Grateful Dead song. But if I am annoyed, I pick something from the Three Stooges. I have about half a dozen, three for each, and rarely have trouble remembering which is which. So I guess different mnemonic devices have different solutions. So let's see if we can go to, this is Kurt. Kurt with us from Dayton, Ohio.
Yes, I'm in the military and medical system, and I just wanted to comment that there are many instances where you not only have a lot of different passwords that you have to come up with, but you cannot reuse the passwords that you've had in the past 20 times, and they require you to change them every 3 to 6 months. And for all these different systems, it gets to the point where you have to think of something that is so common that if anyone ever does discover it, they're probably going to discover, you know, be able to crack a whole bunch of different accounts that you have.
Is that an approach that can work, do you think?
Right. So that's something that works for companies, but it's really hard on employees. And what tends to happen is that employees go with something that's really, really simple. Or they're just taking slight variations on the last password that they had to reset or the last password they had to reset. So it's actually, again, it's not great for users, and it doesn't kind of encourage this strong password, because if you have to change it every 3 months, why invest in something that's really hard to remember?
Well, Kurt, good luck with you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, appreciate it. This email from Mary. Passwords are just irritating. My response is to use Gaelic words or to take a phrase that has meaning to me, little brown house, and use Babelfish to translate it into a foreign language, then stick a number in between words. Seems to me that's still going to leave you remembering difficult things. Let's go next to, this is David. David calling from Pittsburgh.
Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Big fan of the show. I care to comment because, unfortunately, over the last few months, I had my banking and credit information was stolen online, and it was used by a group of individuals to buy up thousands and thousands of dollars worth of luxury hotel stays and resort stays all over the planet.
And did you end up having to pay for that?
No. I was lucky enough that the banking information was sort of just like limited, and as they tried to use it, you know, the securities locked them out, which I was very fortunate for. But I spoke with a security counselor from my bank, and they said they advised me really just to limit what they said was my digital footprint online. So I had to sort of just rethink about what I was doing online. I eliminated a lot of social networking information from online, and just a little bit more careful about what I do on the internet, what I purchase, and things like that. So. And I'll take the comments off here.
Okay, thanks very much. Thank you. And Rachel Swaby, that's sort of reducing your digital and online footprint is sort of surrendering a little bit.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like that's sustainable.
Here's an email from Eric. The key is to stop thinking password and start thinking passphrase. Phrases are much easier for us to remember and more difficult for programs to crack. Everybody says you should have 14 letters, but passphrase, you're getting on to a lot more than 14 letters.
Right. So if you use several words in a row, I mean, that gets exponentially harder to crack. But if you use, I mean, even computers can run through several different dictionaries from several different languages, as someone suggested before. So,
yeah, Babelfish.
the word itself doesn't protect you. But yeah, if it's long enough, that helps. If it's 14 characters or longer, that's great.
It's interesting through this, and I assume through much of the industry, you'd say this is a 6-character strong solution. This is an 8-character strong solution. In other words, meaning 6 is pretty weak, so is 8.
Right. I mean, at some point, 6 was fine, but it's not anymore. And neither is 8. So really, I guess for the moment, companies should be asking people to enter much longer passwords.
And what's your strategy? What do you do?
Well, before I wrote the article, I got two-step authentication on everything I could. And I think 1 password is the way to go.
And so is that something you use yourself?
It's something that I need to be using myself.
See, there's the problem.
Exactly. It's not sustainable. It's really hard for people.
It is. As you point out in the piece, ultimately, we're human beings who don't want to mess with this. We want something simple and short.
Well, I feel like, you know, we already put so much work into our kind of online lives. It just seems that putting more time into it is tough, but it's necessary for the moment until we come up with a better solution.
Well, Richard Swaby, good luck getting that two-tier authentication and the 1Pass system. We appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
Rachel Swaby, a freelance writer based in San Francisco, with us today from member station KQED. You can find a link to her Atlantic piece, The Password Fallacy, at our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Tomorrow, we'll talk about some of the ways law enforcement uses DNA, facial recognition, and other high-tech tools, and also about civil liberties. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.